Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
But I have been paying attention to what's going on out across the state. And like I said, I've been listening and I've been impressed.
Our conditions at Fireside and even at Pinnacle are pretty good. But other schools in this state have the most unbelievable conditions. Rats in the classroom, desks that are falling apart, books that don't even support their curriculum. And so we need to support everybody in the state.
I'm disappointed. I would have preferred, obviously, a better outcome.
With this news, I just makes me think about how those obstacles that I was told I was going to be faced with have now increased.
And with us to talk about Governor Ducey's teacher pay raise plan, the Arizona Supreme Court's ruling on DACA students, and more, our former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and David Leibowitz of Leibowitz Solo. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, Chris. So Governor Ducey, did he cave on this teacher pay thing?
Well, yes. You know, I guess you just have to say there's nothing like a reelection campaign and a looming teacher walkout and thousands of walk-ins at schools to focus the mind. And I think that's pretty much what happened.
You know, political consulting world, we have a saying, right? You don't want to let go of the bat, right? You attack somebody, you don't let go of the bat. Ducey ripped the bat out of his Democratic opponent's hands. He smacked Steve Barley and David Garcia over the head with it. Game over.
Okay, and was it as simple as that? Did he just look at the political calculation?
I don't know if he looked. No, I'm not up there on the ninth floor. I mean, I think that we have a yawning need, a pressing need in Arizona to improve education in this state. It moves the needles at the polls. And if you can, you know, reach into the couch cushions and find enough money to give teachers 20% raises without raising taxes, that's a winner.
Well, that seems to be the question, though, right? Like, where does the money come from? That's what we heard earlier from a couple of teachers and education advocates saying, yes, this is great, but, you know, if this is taking money from buying new school buses or fixing up classrooms and things like that, then maybe it's not so great.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing that in the instant reaction from the Red for Ed community, which is, you know, we want to see exactly where the money's coming from. There's some reports out this morning that the Ducey's office is saying it's going to come from Medicaid money, which is kind of odd. Exactly how is that going to happen? And I think the other thing is, look, if they found, you know, $100 million or more in the seat cushions, literally found it. I mean, they somehow found it in the 2 days between Ducey's appearance on KTAR or the radio
station.
Excuse
me. Please don't mention that.
Oh, sorry. On a different radio station.
Mays brings all these notes, and that's not in there. He's got 20 pages of notes.
That other radio station. So imagine 2 days later and after the 1,000 walk-ins at the schools across the state, they suddenly find this money. So, yes, it's a victory, first and foremost, for teachers and parents like me, but it's also quite extraordinary. I think if it, as I said at the outset, if it hadn't been for this reelection campaign and the fact that Ducey saw the polling on this, I'm sure, and his staff, this probably wouldn't have happened. It would not have happened without the parents and teachers of the state.
It probably wouldn't have happened on a Thursday afternoon, 2 days after some of the politicking that had gone on. I mean, I will say, if you, you know, whether you like Governor Ducey or not, if you look at his record on education, there has been demonstrable increase in funding at various points. People will argue that one way or the other. I mean, at the end of the day, look, the quicker we stop talking about teacher pay raises, the faster we can talk about how to backfill the $1 billion that have been stripped away from education since the Great Recession and how to improve student achievement, because nobody is satisfied with the state of Arizona education today.
On the timing issue, though, this is an issue that has been discussed for a while. I mean, Governor Ducey and the legislature gave teachers a 1% pay raise last year. And even before that, teachers have been talking about how they're not well paid. And there wasn't discussion about walking out necessarily. But people recognize that teachers in Arizona weren't paid enough. What happened? I mean, is it just a matter of population growth and the economy getting better that the governor is able to find this money somewhere? Did something really happen in the day between the walkouts and or the walk-ins and the announcement?
You got to call Kirk Adams, the governor's chief of staff, and the governor, and legislative Republican leaders, and figure out what happened. But look, at the end of at the end of the day, I can go back this way. I can tell you, in 2010, at the beginning of my political consulting career, I worked on the Yes on 100 campaign, which was a temporary sales tax increase, right, to raise $1 billion a year for education. And at that point, we talked about how low-paid teachers were. Well, hey, that campaign was about, in 2010, that campaign was to restore education funding to 2004 levels. Now, today, we're talking about restoring education funding to 2008 levels. So we are kind of falling further behind and not really making up that deficit.
Well, and I think ultimately, though, here, and David and I have both been around or in politics or covering politics for a long time, and maybe longer than we want to admit. But
I was 12 when I started.
but I don't know about you guys, but I have never in my life, my lifetime here in Arizona, seen a situation like this in which a governor did a complete about-face within the span of a couple of days, all because really of a grassroots movement of angry parents and teachers. I mean, I think it really became a boiling point for parents and moms like me who go to their schools every day with their kids. And one of the most important people in their lives, in the lives of their children, is being grossly underpaid. You know, I think one of the worst moments for Ducey probably in his tenure and now as governor was when he was quoted as saying, you know, I'm not defending being last, but I'm not saying it's okay to be 48th or last. We're just not last. Well, just not last is just not good enough for moms and dads out there.
So from a PR standpoint, and I mean not an actual public relations consulting, because I don't know what you charge, David. We don't want to get into that. But if, in fact—
Call Craig Harris at the Arizona Republic. He'll report it at great length, and fictionally as well.
Do teachers, whether it's the Red for Ed movement, whether it's Save Our Schools, do they ultimately, if this is upfront, what the governor's proposing, do they have to accept it? Do they risk losing public support?
It'd be very difficult. I mean, people talk about the situation in other states, Kentucky and Oklahoma, where teachers turned down the offer. It'd be tough today. I mean, the Arizona Republic has an editorial today saying, can't walk out now. And it would look fairly ungrateful. If you demand a 20% raise, and along comes somebody who says 1% plus 9% plus 5%, I'll give you the 20% raise that you want. And you say, you know what, that 20% raise we asked for, no, we want a different 20% raise. It would be really hard because, look, most people are operating at a headline level. I mean, not your typical brilliant K-Jazz listener, but most folks, they just saw, oh, well, I guess Ducey fixed it.
Yeah. I mean, David was right that Ducey fixed a part of the problem, and he also fixed his reelection problem in one fell swoop with this move. But what the Red for Ed people really need to do now is, as David said, accept this pay increase, because if they fund it, if they actually do find this money, it's a good, good thing. But there are four other parts to their demands that haven't been met. The $1 billion in unfunded or defunded costs or funding for schools, the funding for pay raises for support staff, maintenance of facilities, all those things did not get fixed. And so the Red for Ed folks are going to have to accept this and then move on to work on those other
things. Well, yeah, I mean, I think where you run the risk is if you appear to not accept this, at some point, I think public opinion pivots and people begin to talk about, well, maybe the problem with Arizona schools is not a resource-driven problem. Maybe we have the wrong people in classrooms, and we start talking about results. If we start talking about NAEP scores and we say, well, you know, only one out of three Arizona students can actually read at a proficient level in eighth grade, that's a really bad conversation for the Red for Ed movement. They need to continue to talk about funding, and they gain ground there. But eventually, I mean, if it starts to become a results-driven conversation, that changes the context dramatically.
For teachers who, even if the proposal is something teachers can accept and they do accept it, how challenging will it be to continue talking about some of those other issues, getting, you know, funding for counselors and other school employees, making sure that, you know, the roof is safe on schools, textbooks are up to date. Because, Chris, as you said, every parent who sends their child to a school has a teacher. Not every parent who sends their child to a school has a counselor in their child's life or necessarily sees, like, a cafeteria worker or someone like that.
Yeah, it does make it a little tougher, but I don't think you can underestimate the power of this movement. I mean, it again, it's like nothing I've ever seen in Arizona before, and I'm not sure you're just going to completely diffuse it with this. This will help solve part of the problem, but, you know, we send our kids to schools that are dilapidated. And you see that every day. And even with this 20% pay increase, we're still going to be below surrounding states. You're still going to have that pressure. This is not going to take us into the upper reaches of the rankings for well-paid teachers in the country.
I'll play devil's advocate for a second. I wouldn't overestimate the power of this movement either. I do think people have a limited capacity to pay attention to issues, even issues like education that they care about. I think once you get beyond talking about restoring education funding to the level before the recession, I think people have a limited.
We're still $1 billion in the hole.
I think people can talk about that and they understand that. I think people can talk about teacher pay. I think you lose people the minute you start talking about cafeteria workers and counselors and things like that. And it's not a knock on the movement. We just have a lot of things competing. Look, I do a lot of work with public safety. If you're going to start telling me that we need to find money to pay cafeteria workers, I'm going to start telling you that we need to find money to actually pay police officers and firefighters what they should get paid. Now, a teacher is on the same platform of public servant. A guidance counselor, unfortunately, and I don't mean to disrespect guidance counselors, but they're just not in that same genre.
Now, briefly before the break, I do want to get a couple minutes in about this Arizona Supreme Court ruling about DACA and in-state tuition. Speaking of funding schools, Chris, how impactful do you think that's going to be ultimately, and does it, in some ways, does the legislature take up this issue? I'm talking about university funding, higher education funding, that's been stripped by the legislature as well. Where do we go from here?
Well, I'll leave it to David to say whether the legislature's going to take this up. I'm guessing he's going to say no, and I'll say no as well. I don't think that's going
to
happen.
If the legislature, if they take it up, what they'll take up is there a way to deny any admission to a public university or community college to any person, DACA or otherwise, who is not an American citizen? Right. That would be something I could totally see them leaning into.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be pretty impactful because basically what happened was the Supreme Court said that DACA recipients cannot get in-state tuition. And the difference between in-state tuition at ASU, where I work, and out-of-state tuition is the difference between $9,000 and $27,000. Now, the universities and the community colleges had been offering about 2,400 DACA recipients the lower in-state tuition. Now they can't get that. There is a sort of middle ground that the Board of Regents tried to achieve.
150%.
150% of the in-state tuition, which is about 14,000, that some of those DACA students, if they've had 3 years of high school here, can get. So we'll see how that shakes out, but it's not good news for DACA recipients.
David, briefly before the break, I wanted to follow up on something Chris said before about how she's never seen a movement like the schools movement. Have we ever seen a situation where a group of people like DACA students are so universally praised by both parties and yet really nothing is done to help them?
Well, I mean, it's a congressional issue, it's a presidential issue, et cetera. What I'd really ideally like to see is if we're talking about 2,400 students, you'd love to see the private sector step in and figure out a way to fund scholarships and grants, regardless of whether it's an in-state tuition or it's an out-of-state tuition, because 2,400 people in a state of 7 million people is not an incredibly imposing problem to have to fix.
That's David Leibowitz. Also here is Chris Mays. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Mark Brody. We will continue with more of the Friday Newscap after this. Good morning. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ 91.5, along with Chris Mays, former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair, and David Leibowitz of Leibowitz Solo. I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody.
So, guys, we've been talking a lot about education, and another issue related to education that came up this week will be debated at the state capitol next week is about gun safety, school safety, and, of course, in the wake of the shooting in Parkland, Florida. Chris, what do you make, first off, of the plan that the governor has put forward and some of the response he's gotten, both positive and negative?
Yeah, it's interesting. He put forward a proposal that actually I thought it went further than I thought he would, and I think he gets some credit for that, quite honestly. But that engendered opposition from both sides. So you had folks on the left saying, obviously, it didn't go far enough by, you know, looking at background checks for everyone. Folks, you know, on the right said, you know, no, you can't do this. You can't take away, potentially take away guns from folks who are deemed to be a threat. And they got that sort of pared back, the time frame that those guns could be taken away. Gabby Giffords, who I respect a great deal on this issue, as a tremendously influential voice, said that it actually makes the process for getting someone declared getting a restraining order against someone more onerous in some ways, which is troublesome for Ducey's proposal as well. So it's interesting. It engendered opposition from both sides of the aisle.
Good thing, bad thing that people on both sides are opposed to it?
Well, you know, if you're doing your job, you probably angered people on both sides. I mean, it's interesting to see different cities. I'm watching, like, the city of Glendale, where I work with police officers and firefighters, and Glendale came out with, we're going to put a school resource officer in every high school, right. And public safety shrugs their shoulders and says, that's just a silly idea. Now they're looking for ways to, you know, how can we find $1.5 million now that we've said we're going to do this and we've gotten, you know, we're on the front page, we're going to do school resource officers. And there's no one in public safety who, you know, who believes that pulling resources off the street on a daily basis and putting them in schools like this, in a place where we've never had a school shooting, knock on wood, thank God, is a good idea or a wise idea.
But, you know, again, getting back to moms, you know, it is nice to see, and I think good to see at least this issue being debated and discussed. And I personally don't think it goes far enough, and I think there's a lot more that we have to do. And, you know, unfortunately, it scares me to think that this could happen in Arizona.
Sure.
Certainly has happened in other forums, as we've seen here in Arizona, with the shooting of Gabby Giffords and her staff and others in Tucson and in other forums. So it's terribly scary, and I'm appreciative at least of them taking it up.
The piece I appreciate, you know, a family member of mine doesn't live in Arizona, but lives in a state where they have the Baker Act, where you can have somebody hospitalized against their will. Our family had to go ahead and take advantage of that. Mm. And this was somebody who was a danger to the people around, potentially a danger to others in society. So the fact that the governor has sort of taken that into consideration, and it looks like we may have a window to do something like that, I think is a long overdue and very important idea.
We talked in the last segment with relation to teacher pay about how the governor's proposal was at least in part due to the movement of teachers and parents and students demanding something to be done. How much of this proposal do you guys think is based on students and parents and, to an extent, teachers and other, you know, sort of advocates saying, look, we got to do something about this, too?
There's only a couple of three issues in the world that people really understand and are very visceral. Education is one of them. Public safety is another one. People get it. You know, you start to talk to people about the environment and things like that, they don't really understand that. It doesn't have the same gravity. So I do think that the fact that people are, that they're paying attention, that it's at the top of the news, that we're talking about it here, gives it a special importance. And that's the turf on which this November election will be fought.
Yeah, and I think the fact that a Republican governor like Governor Ducey took this up is a testament to the power of what the Parkland students did in the aftermath of that shooting. The fact that they galvanized public attention, continued to be articulate about this, continued to force the issue, required the attention of even Republican governors who weren't doing anything after the numerous other shootings across this country, mass shootings across this country, including Las Vegas, you know, the largest. So it's quite remarkable, I think, what occurred.
Well, yeah, I mean, at some point, if you're a political consultant, you take a look and you say, on the one hand, I'm a Republican. I need to be in a strong position on the Second Amendment if I think I have any credible chance of getting elected in the state of Arizona. On the other hand, I read polling that says 9 out of 10 people support additional gun control measures, including universal background checks. So there's a tension there. I have to figure that tension out, and I have to do it quickly, or I'm going to lose. That's really what it comes down to.
And finally, let's move on to Washington politics. And David, we've seen another high-profile critic, Republican critic, at least for a while, of President Trump, Paul Ryan, who's the House Speaker. Now he's saying he's not going to run for re-election. And so I pose this question to you. Is that terrific. He's going to spend more time with his family, or is this a cop out by a politician who doesn't have a spine?
I think there's a middle ground. I think that politics in Washington today is incredibly thankless work. I think if you're somebody like Paul Ryan and you believe that you are a fundamental conservative who would like to shrink government, lower taxes, et cetera, and you find yourself with no place to go because the President of the United States has, on the one hand, done some things that look conservative, on the other hand, has done some stuff that I could only characterize as crazy followed by profanities I wouldn't utter on the air here. I mean, at some point, what are you doing? Why are you there? But for $168,000 a year?
But if you're Speaker of the House, this is one of those things I come back to. Maybe I shouldn't use this example, but when Joe Arpaio was sheriff and things were starting to get a little shaky, and he was saying the judges were after him, these powerful forces are against him. You're the Maricopa County Sheriff, and you were elected four or five times. So now the Speaker of the House doesn't have the power to sort of counter someone? I don't understand
this. But that's just it. You know, I think Paul Ryan sort of put himself in this position by not staying faithful to his original brand of conservatism, to Reagan Republicanism. And, you know, by going all in and jumping in the tank with Donald Trump and, you know, all for the sake of this tax cut and then, you know, ballooning the deficit in the way that he did, he didn't do himself any favors and wound up with friends on not very many sides of this. In addition, I will say this is fascinating because this does no favors for people in Arizona running for office if they have an R behind their name. You know, Paul Ryan, especially for Congress and Senate, Paul Ryan was going to be one of the chief fundraisers for these folks. The fact that he's bailing out is a terrible signal that basically the Republicans have lost the House already and maybe potentially on the verge of losing the Senate. I sort of don't necessarily think that's going to happen at this point, but not a good sign. I don't think it's devastating for Republicans running for statewide office or for Senate or House. But it's definitely symbolic of the problem they're facing.
Yeah, I don't know if it has real impact on Republican races in the state of Arizona. I mean, I get that. I'm sure Democrats wish it to be so. On the other hand, I mean, again, anybody who is going back to Washington, D.C. at this point has got to be questioning their sanity. Why would you do this job? I mean, look, I've talked to many members of the Arizona congressional delegation over the last couple of years about a whole host of different issues. There's not one person who tells you, I love what I do here. This is great. I'll tell you what, there's a real culture of bipartisanship. We're really getting things done. Yeah. I mean, people are there. They're swimming around a cesspool every day. Eventually, if you're Paul Ryan, maybe you come up for air and you say, you know what, I can go to the private sector. I can make 10x the money I'm making. I'll see my kids more often. I can, you know, why do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just think a lot of people are realizing that if you want to get things done, you got to do it on the statewide or local level. And Congress is a terrible place to go if you want to try to do that. But, it's hard to say if this will have a huge impact on local races, but I just don't think that it is good in any manner. And it sort of flows alongside or sits alongside the Jeff Flake retirement. Really, it's in that category. These guys who came up during the Reagan Revolution, who are looking at this impending, who knows, potential impeachment or process or with a Mueller report, even if there is no impeachment process going, I want no part of that whole imbroglio.
Yeah, I mean, I look at somebody like Flake and I look at somebody like Ryan, and you got to think, like, I'm in this club, right? I'm in this conservative Republican club. I don't like the way it looks anymore. And I consider myself to be a person of honor.
Right.
Do I want to keep doing this? And I think that's probably, you know, it's easy to say, well, you know, my kids only know me as a weekend dad and stuff like that. And that's everybody, right? I'm pursuing other interests, going to spend more time with my family. But at some point, you got to question, like, is this something I want to be a part of?
Well, Chris, finally, is this a temporary tsunami then? I mean, are we going to see people like Paul Ryan and Jeff Flake back? Is this just sort of, they're going to go to the wilderness for 2 to 4 years or no?
Boy, that's a great, that's the $64,000 question. I don't know. I think that, once you go into the wilderness, it's hard to come back from that.
Well, somebody like Matt Salmon, right? He went off into the wilderness and then he came back. He's back in the wilderness.
Except
Jeff Flake actually literally goes into the wilderness every so often, right?
Well, they got on deserted islands. But, So I don't know. It remains to be seen what the Republican Party looks like. I mean, that's fundamentally your question, Steve, is what does the Republican Party look like during and after the age of Trump? And it just doesn't look like it look anything like it did when I was in office. Or...
clearly, you know, things sway back and forth, right?
Sure.
We swayed pretty far to get to Trump. And so the key thing that you just said is, what does it look like post-Trump?
Yeah.
Whether that's in 2 years or 6 years, what does it look like? And then people come out of the wilderness.
And Dave, I want to give you a few final seconds. A prominent Native American passed away. It was a really interesting story. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Rod Lewis was the first Native American attorney in the state of Arizona, the first Native American attorney anywhere to argue and win a case before the United States Supreme Court. As the father of the Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Lewis, and he passed away at age 77. And I'd characterize it like this. That's a true public servant,
yeah.
Somebody who has been a fierce advocate for his people on water issues, on Indian rights issues, et cetera, for many, many years. Never talk about somebody like that. We spent a lot of time lamenting the loss of Paul Ryan, who just went on a nice vacation.
David Leibowitz of Leibowitz Solo and Chris Mays, former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair, thanks for joining us today, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.